Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First up today, folks, we're going to follow up on what I considered, frankly, an incredible story. How a small group was able to find 300 people with disabilities in India, meaningful employment. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Sean Wiltshire from Avalon Employment. So tell me a little bit about the latest with your disabilities work.
Well, recently, myself and Tammy Berninski and Dr. Marcia Ryu, we just returned from a trip to the three countries in Southeast Asia, Bangladesh, Nepal, and India. We're coming to the end of the project now in October, so it's really about helping these organizations find sustainability plans, looking at where to, when the project ends, and it's also a lot about the reporting about the success we've had and identifying, you know, what were the factors in that success so that it can be replicated again and again and more people will have an opportunity. And, you know, it's also about changing the attitudes. I mean, we think about how far we've come in educating both employers and individuals with disabilities about their ability to work and the employer's ability to get a great employee. So it's changing the conversation. So this has been the most recent stuff. It's a continuation of what we've been doing, but it really has been sort of focused now on some next steps.
So in these countries, what sort of change have you seen over time in regards to their attitudes toward people with disabilities?
Well, it's developed almost in three parts. It's one from a pity model that, you know, you do this because you should, regardless of the person's ability or aptitude. It developed from that into corporate social responsibility of we do want to do something good and give valuable work. And now it's being more again seen as I need an employee, you have a great receptionist, and she just happens to go to work in a wheelchair. Or you have an engineer who writes code who just happens to be blind and uses a particular piece of equipment. So employers now are starting to recognize, because there are some labor challenges in each of the countries. In Nepal, you have 1,500 people a day leaving the country to go work abroad in Oman, United Arab Emirates. So they do have a labor drain. And the unemployment rate in Nepal over the last 10 years has been hovering somewhere around 3.4%. So it's considered full employment in most economic models. And then this is an opportunity for us to increase the participation rate of people with disabilities because the unemployment rate for them is huge. So it's a change over a period of time, and you can see it in people's attitudes of how they engage with folks and understanding a little more that disability is just different. It's not bad. It's just different. And people, you know, how does somebody getting to work affect their ability to do the job? So it's focusing on the skills and it's kind of people having a more open attitude towards people who have a disability and whether or not, you know, yes, you could be part of my employ.
So What were some of the key strategies and tools used to tear down the myths surrounding disability to essentially, move
I
it?
I think that, it was really a couple of things that were instrumental, I think. One was part of it was the employer champion. So we started slow, and when you had one success and the success went very well, you often approached the employer and said, could you speak on your experience? And most times the employer was delighted to have the opportunity to both highlight their organization as diverse and advanced, but also to give a real world view of what their experience was. And, you know, I think of Lemon Tree Hotel in India, who struggled to find people to clean their rooms because people didn't want their children, you know, cleaning a hotel room. And during one of the opportunities that the hotel took to meet the families, they had a picnic and a barbecue. And they shared with people how valuable the work was and how important the people with disabilities were to the whole chain and the hotel. And so it demonstrated people's value. And so the employer became the advocate for the change. You know, lots of times it didn't go well because something didn't match right. But that happens in every human resources, you know, process. Sometimes it goes well. But during the process, we learned the best way to educate people was those employers to talk to other employers, because business to business always is more productive. And the other big thing was is that we looked at the individual skills. We didn't go for training. We looked at, you know, we moved from the demand side to the supply side. So we looked at individual skills and said, what are the skills you have now? What are some of your hidden skills? As we know, resume is but a picture in time, and it doesn't give anybody an opportunity to say all of the skills they have. So one of our processes was a two-stage interview and getting to know the person in a more organic conversation versus a prescriptive one. Tell me about yourself. Tell me what are the things you like to do. Let me know about you. And through this opportunity, we got to help identify people's hidden skills. And we matched those skills with their general education skills to a job that an employer has. So rather than putting somebody in training endlessly, we really said, you know, you have got skills. You've made it this far. We know you have value. And so we're going to identify that, and we're going to match it with a job that an employer has. And that's the process that we used. And it's been instrumental in not only educating people with disabilities about they can work, but it's been instrumental in allowing the employers to talk about their success and be the advocate that, you know, we are all looking for.
So with this project wrapping up, what do you foresee for the future? Do you think this will be sort of the cornerstone for the work going ahead?
We hope. We always hope that, you know, the sharing of process and lessons learned give people an opportunity. I think that what's changed, and I particularly want to highlight India, because it's just been, you know, well over 300 people gone to work, and that's been an attitudinal change. So I think, to be honest with you, it the community has been changed. Yes, you are right. The cornerstone has been laid. We hope that through continued success of the people who are already working, that employers will be open to saying, you know, you have the skills. The fact that you might have vision in one eye or you might have a hearing challenge, those are things that are not going to affect your ability to do the job. And that's really the legacy is the ability for a community to be changed fundamentally in how they view people.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, thanks.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Ann Jackson, who'll be telling us a little bit about her research into disability life. So tell me a little bit about your disabilities research.
My disability research is in the field of unconscious bias. I was watching The Walking Dead, and I find that sort of thing very frightening, but I have worked in the disability field for a long time. And it suddenly struck me, why do zombies appear in these horror movies? When you look at vampires as sort of sexy and upper class and Count Dracula. So it has a very sort of social level and a very fast level, because vampires are very fast moving and sort of sexy. And then when you go on to the werewolves, they're sort of masculine. But why zombies? And it just struck me that it was an unconscious bias towards people with disabilities. And so that was started me on my course of research. It's been terribly interesting so far.
So how have things progressed since you got the idea?
Well, it's kind of snowballed. First of all, I would talk to people about it, and they thought I was joking. And so I needed to get some concrete evidence as to why I was thinking the way I was. I also approached people in the disability community, and I was overwhelmed by the positive response to what I was saying. I have a few friends who are in wheelchairs, and I had noticed when they were talking, because they're at a lower level, people don't really pay attention to them. And I had mentioned to them, is this something to do with the fact that you feel invisible, like nobody particularly looks at you, they don't want to have anything to do with you? And they overwhelmingly said yes, they feel sort of ignored. And also, the virus-based modern zombie, as opposed to the sort of witch doctor old version zombie, is the one I'm concentrating on, because it's virus-based. Which means that hopefully there's some the hope for the future that maybe we can cure it. But also, people don't want to touch people with disabilities in case they get sort of like the disability cooties from them. And I had mentioned that too to my friends with disabilities, and they totally agreed that people, you know, physically shy away from any kind of contact with them. So I this sort of gave me more confidence to pursue what I really do feel is a bias towards people with disabilities.
So, in your opinion, how do we move from this bias into a place where we can just keep an open mind? What would you suggest for society?
Well, I'm concentrating on digital media, so that would be film and television. I'd like to bring in gaming too, but I think that's maybe too broad at the moment. But film and television. So if you look back to activists who started to want to bring in actors and actresses of different color, that was a very radical thing to do at the time. And now it's fairly mainstream. So I'm wondering if, when we understand where the bias is coming from, and this is in fact, you know, my thesis is correct, then hopefully we can change people's view of how they see people with disabilities. I had just noticed somebody sent me a link that The Walking Dead have just introduced a character that's going to be in their next series. Next set of episodes, and it's going to be they're going to bring in a deaf actress. No idea how they're going to do it, but to me, this is a very, very positive thing, and I'm terribly interested in how they portray it.
So,
it being the disability.
So, has there been any success in your research so far that you'd like to share?
Not really. I'm just going into second year, so I'm still early on in the process. But I find it very interesting that it's a fairly polarized statement. When I make it, people either can see it, which to me is good, and or they think it's utterly ridiculous, which actually also is quite fun too. It doesn't particularly put me off, but I would like to know why you think it's ridiculous. And the answers that I've got from people have not put me off in any way. But to see people with disabilities as apart from us is something that we need to understand more, the unconscious bias, because it even goes into refugees and color prejudice, things like that. Biases are things that we all have, and we don't have very much understanding of where they come from. And hopefully with my research, we can find a way to, we'll never get rid of them, because I think it's part of human nature, also part of human survival, because we need to look at things and categorize them fairly quickly as a sort of survival mechanism. But in where we are today, we don't particularly need that anymore. So if we have a better understanding of it, hopefully we can make people more empathetic to differences. And we're all different. It's just on what scale that we're different. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, no problem.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Kingsville Folk Music Festival is back for 2018. Join us August 10th to the 12th with performances from Alan Doyle of Great Big Sea, Eugene Smith, Birds of Chicago, the David Broomberg Quintet, Fred Penner, and many more. Also featuring local musicians Max Marshall, Tara Watts, and Justin Latham. The Kingsville Folk Music Festival has established itself as one of Southwest Ontario's summer destination spots for fans and lovers of music, ranging from blues to bluegrass, Celtic to country, and roots to indie. Maps, tickets, and more information can be found at kingsvillefolkfest.org. Don't miss out on the Festival of the Summer, happening August 10th to the 12th. This event is proudly sponsored by CJAM 99.1 FM, redefining radio in Windsor, Detroit, and beyond.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Sean Wiltshire and Ann Jackson. Our show, we'll hear from Renee Delaire from the Association Québécois de Voix Amputée. So, can you tell me a little bit about the association's work?
Yeah, what we do is that we provide sailing for people with significant disabilities, mostly those with a physical disability. We are even able to help to have some people sailing that can't move their arms and legs, but they sip and puff on straws so that they are able to control the sailboat by themselves.
So how do you go about letting people know about this work?
Well, at the very beginning, most of them are very intrigued and they don't think they can do it. And that's where it becomes for them quite a discovery, and this is something that we promote so that we recruit people in different ways through organizations that already exist and provide other services for people with disabilities. I don't know if what I answered you goes towards what you were thinking of.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So when you mentioned you have people with no arms and legs able to control the sails, how do you make that work for them?
Hey.
How do you adapt the sail?
It's a system that's been developed after, we're talking about, I could say about the third or fourth, if not fifth generation of such system. But basically, it consists of two straws in which the person puffs and sips or SIP. And one of the straw controls the cells. And what they do is that when they puff into the straw, there are motors that are being activated so that the cells move out, and they can go downwind very easily that way. And when they sit, it brings the cells in, and that way they're able to go up the wind, up against the wind, not completely straight, but in an angle like a regular sailor. And it's the same thing with the rudder. The rudder is being controlled by sipping, you're going one way, puffing, you're going the other way. So it's a system that was at the beginning developed in Vancouver, and was then brought into a more reliable system, and there's been lots of development since, and most of the components, except for the control box, most of the components are readily available on the market for sailing. Like for the rudder, for instance, it's a piston that's usually used for power assist for motors, outboards or other kinds of boats, other kinds of motors, and for the sails, they're winches. There are winches that are also used in sailboats for to bring it in and out the sails. So they've just been adapted so they could fit the sailboat that we use.
So, yeah. Are there any challenges in putting this together for someone who has a limb difficulty?
Well, the challenge by itself is more related to sailing by itself than related to being able or not being able to use the system or because we have all kinds of ways to control the sailboat. It's a specially designed sailboat, and I talked about the sip and puff right now, but it can also be used by people who have limited use of their arms, and when that happens, then they can do it with a finger and a joystick, like they would do it when they are using their a motorized wheelchair, for instance. And then those who are paraplegic, then everything is close to their arms, so that they can control the sails with sheets. That's the sailing word for cords, that they can pull and push and position in such a way that the sails are doing exactly the same actions that I previously explained. And all this to tell you that the challenges towards for the person with the disability is basically exactly the same as any sailor would have, which means that it's the fundamentals of sailing that the person needs to learn over the course of trial and errors and theory that bring the person to be over time, you know, better and better, and at the same time learning all the time.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a second, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing, my friends, to hear that individuals with no limbs are able to operate a sail. A lot of people in society would say, that's impossible, it can't be done. But the fact is, as long as one person is willing to ask the question, to explore a little deeper, progress can in fact be made. And that's also something that was reminiscent in Sean's interview. Getting 300 people with disabilities meaningful work, possibly for the very first time, it's just incredible. And yeah, sometimes, like any worker, the one with the disability might have some difficulties during their day. But fact is, it's not just, we got you the job, now it's up to you to figure it all out. I think there is an ongoing process of monitoring and getting real education going so these employers can understand and not underestimate what a person with a disability can do. For if they can operate a sailboat, who's to say what they can or cannot do? The limitations that we as a society tend to place on people with disabilities are not their limitations. They don't see the glass ceiling that we do necessarily. They see a stepping stone. What works, what doesn't, what can we learn from it, what can we gain by it, and how can we make the next attempt, the next bit of progress, that much better. The truth is, what Anne was saying factors in as well. Maybe there is an unconscious perception to think that people who don't have disabilities are stronger, more capable, what have you. Fact is, give someone the right tools, the right opportunity, they'll achieve every time. Doesn't matter who they are, where they're coming from, what they're hoping to achieve. If it means that much, they will find a way. And it is not the right or the place of anyone in society to say, I'll believe in you to this point that you can do this or that, but the next step, nah, can't have that. But that is just to keep outdated notions in place. Notions that many of us may be comfortable with, that people with disabilities don't have that strength that really does exist within them. May be comfortable like an old shoe to look at us as the strong ones and them as the ones who will just have limited lives. But fact is, those people, every one of them, have a story to share, insights to offer, and a better world that they're helping to create. Not because everything they do is inspirational, but because everything they put themselves to is meaningful. A small step can, in fact, change the world. And it's up to each of us to say, I'm going to be that voice that encourages you and believes you will reach that greater potential. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.